Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Parenting is Easy podcast, where we will discuss the pleasures and the frustrations, the good and the bad, and the rewarding and the troubling aspects of parenting. I am your host, Hananya Abraham, and I'm a psychotherapist that specializes in working with teenagers, young adults, and parents with a specific niche in assisting with communication within the family dynamics. While everyone has their own unique journey and experiences as a parent and as a child, there are many common affiliations and attributes that we can all relate to and share. Together, we will learn from personal stories and experiences from parents across many different backgrounds, cultures, and communities. So get comfortable, grab your glass of coffee, and let's get right into the interview. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Parenting is Easy, Said No One Ever. I am your host, Hananya Abraham, and I have such an awesome and exciting guest today that I have been trying to get on the show for a really long time. Sean SF Banks. SF, thank you so much for joining us today. I just want to talk a little bit about so our readers and our listeners can get to know a little bit about you. SF is the publisher of You Can Have It All, which is the largest and the fastest growing kids and entertainment motivational magazine in the world. Has been the creator of Camp World Warrior King for over 10 years and has been counting and has for over 10 years and counting, and has helped thousands of youth gain exposure to amazingly fun activities as well. He's also the founder of You Can Have It All Youth Conferences, which I want to hear about as well. Developer of Team Hot Sauce, an awesome cartoon, which we'll hopefully get to a little bit as well. And the innovator of Team Hot Sauce Success Stacks, and also the author of a few books. And there are so many different things that we can really start off over here, SF. But thank you so much for being here. And maybe you could talk a little bit about yourself and how you got into this awesome career and motivational area of things that you've been doing.
Thank you so much for having me. Really excited. And yeah, we've been trying to connect for a while, so I'm happy that we're able to do it. Listen, when I first started all this, I couldn't stand kids at all. I couldn't stand kids. I mean, I had zero passion to work with youth. You know, figured just like most of us that somebody was doing something out here for these doggone kids, but it wasn't going to be me. And I was struck with a passion for youth. Kind of started to see what was going on with kids in just various communities and if there wasn't a lot being done. And my, you know, years prior to that, when I was about 16, 17 years old, my aunt and cousin were murdered in a domestic violence situation. And I always wanted to do something in their honor, but I just never knew what that was going to be. No idea what it would be. I figured maybe a memorial or like maybe some kind of scholarship or fund one day, right? Never thought that I would be doing what I'm doing now. And that's how it started was, you know, I started with self-defense, teaching self-defense to women and children in hopes that they would get away from, you know, a vicious attacker should they be in that situation. And then everything grew from there.
Well, I want to take it even a step back from that, because as much as that might have been your motivation, but I think it was something about your upbringing and the type of home you grew up in. Can you talk a little bit about that and what that was like growing up in Seattle, if I remember correctly?
Yes. So I was in Seattle, grew up a single parent household with my mom, living in basically the hood. And yeah, Seattle has hoods. You know, you think of Seattle, you think Microsoft, you think trees, you think water, you know, or, you know, weed or something else. You don't think hood, but it's definitely hood, has its hood areas. And that's where I started. But my mom had a huge dream. We used to clean houses for some of the wealthiest people in Seattle and around the Puget Sound. And so I would go into these massive houses and I would be cleaning them. But I was able to see how other people lived. And my mom would always tell me, hey, look, you know, you can have that too, right? Just because this is where you're starting doesn't mean that's where you're going to end up. And beautiful. It was my mom that put that dream inside of me to be able to dream bigger. She always said dreaming is 50%. The other half is hard work.
Oh, I love that. That's an awesome recipe and like two simple ingredients. But obviously, there's a lot more that goes into making sure you have those two fine ingredients. But I want to talk a little bit about that single parent to home and what that was like for you. And I'm curious if you could talk about that a little bit. And then also, what advice would you give to single parents and how they should be setting up things for their kids at home in general?
Absolutely. So growing up single parent home, it's, you don't really know what you're missing or what it's like because you don't know what it's like to be in a two parent household, right? So, and, a lot of times we'll say, well, man, this kid or whoever needs a two parent household. Yes, but if the other person in the household is a jerk, right, or isn't going to be a good parent, then it's better to have the single parent. So it's really relative. In my case, I grew up with my mom, and my dad was not there. He was in and out of my life, and it was very hurtful in that sense because I never understood as a kid why my dad wasn't consistent, why he didn't stay there. And so that caused a lot of issues for me in school because I would fight a lot. I would get in trouble because I was angry. Angry because, we were in poverty, angry because there was drugs and there was gangs and I was afraid to walk back and forth, to school because there were shootings and all this stuff. And I was like, man, if my dad was there, maybe this would be different. But living with my mother was, I mean, we didn't lack for anything. Even though we were in poverty, we always had food. The lights may be off, but we had candles. My mother is a very resourceful person. So I learned how to be resourceful. And so what I would say to any person that's a single parent is that you are enough, right? You are enough. Your child is not lacking because they don't have the partner, right? You are enough, and to be resourceful to make up for what you may feel is missing. For example, there wasn't a father in my household. So what my mother did is she got me involved in martial arts. She got me involved in sports or other activities, acting, dance, whatever, where there were, where there was a male influence where I could have that male mentorship. And so for parents that are single parents, if you're a single parent dad and you have a daughter and let's say you wanted to be around more women, then, there's Girl Scouts, there's all these different kind of places that you can maybe expose them to be able to make up for those gaps.
I love that. I love that. And you said something as you started off your answer over here, talking about, there's a certain point in your life and you realize, you know what, it's better not to have that person in my life if they were unhealthy. I'm curious for you specifically, when was that aha moment where you're like, hey, you know what, it's probably better the other person wasn't there. And I think sometimes as a parent, we become guilty that I'm sorry, I can't give more to my child. So what's that balance regarding helping a child see that for themselves? And you know what, it's better that it's only us. Mom
The
and the kids.
right. So for me, it was as I got older, right? Just looking back, and saying, okay, now that I've been able to see how this person has behaved over the years, I would have become a different person had they been an influence in my life, my entire life. And so it was something that I didn't really understand when I was a kid. I felt like that void was always there. And there are some good things that, they brought into my life when they were present. But at the same time, there's other characteristics that, I'm happy I didn't pick up. And so what a parent can do in that situation when their child is currently in there is to love them, right? The child is going to have that feeling of, man, where's my dad, or where's my mom, or where's this person? And the best thing you can do is to love them, right? You can't, there's no way to replace that unique individual. But you can replace the void with other individuals who can share that type of love. For example, my stepfather was a great man in my life. I mean, I wa by watching my stepfather and watching my brother-in-law is how I learned how to treat a woman and how to love a woman, right? Because I watched my stepfather, who was from Trinidad, very jovial, happy man. I learned to be happy and to be joyful because that was his energy. Brother-in-law, very happy individual, crack jokes, very soft-spoken, very strong men. But that's how I learned. And so by filling those voids with things or other people, it really helped me out.
Wow. Yeah. And I think that's something that as parents, whether it's from a single or two parent household, we're always trying to teach our kids. But when it comes to that single parent household, obviously there are a lot of things that could be avoided, but you're saying a lot of it has to do with what is the attitude of mom or dad, that whatever is in the picture. And just because there's something missing doesn't mean that there's something missing. And there are things that could be made up and doing things to sort of fill the void in a certain way. And I think one of the things that I've seen you talk about all over, and we're going to post so many links that you have going for you, because I feel like the concept of the motivation, it's not just about being a motivational speaker, it's about being a motivational influencer in a certain way, using that word properly and not just the way it's used today in social media. But I think that's something that people can really benefit from everything that you've been teaching. But I'm curious, when you talk about the concept of resilience and things that you've been through personally in a single parent home, what are some of the lessons that you've picked up for yourself, and how do you try to give that over to others?
In regards to resilience, as a child, in watching my mom, when she started her cleaning service, she couldn't get, anyone to help her work. And she would, and at first it was really hard to get clients, but she never gave up. And so she would go, and let's just start with what resiliency is. Resiliency is pretty much being a ball, right? And you hit the ground, you get back up. And so, she would go and, day after day, try to get clientele. And, it's really difficult to get to say, hey, look, I want to come into your home when you're not there, right? It's not 2023 where you can have cameras all over. I'm going to come in your house when you're not home, and I'm going to clean it with all your personal belongings and your jewelry and whatever there. And I'm not going to touch anything. I'm going to leave it just how it is, and you're going to pay me to do that, right? And so you're talking about the late 80s, early 90s. That was very difficult, especially in a city where, there was a lot of segregation and division, and also there was a wealth divide, right? So a lot of the wealthy people were on the other side of the lake. And so you had to go all the way over there, but that was where the money was. And so, she would, people would say no a lot. And I watched that. And then what started happening is one person would say yes, and then she would start get referral business. And then check this out. During the time my mother had a cleaning service, the mayor of Seattle actually was somebody went to high school with her. And she went to the mayor and said, hey, I have a cleaning service. I'd like to come and clean your house. And start off, I think she started doing it for free at first, and said, hey, look, if I do this, do you mind letting people know about me? And you have to think about that, right? Here's somebody who we went to high school together, right? You're the mayor and I'm coming to clean your house. It takes you got to eat a lot of crows, right? Swallow your pride. But she had a goal. She did that and things took off, right? We started cleaning all kind of commercial buildings and places. Matter of fact, when the Exxon Valdez spill happened in the Puget Sound, it was my mother's company. I was cleaning a lot of the offices that they would have, the cleanup stations and stuff. My mom's company was cleaning those up. And so, but I watched her fall down, get up, fall down, get up. And that taught me how to do the same thing.
Right. So I think a very close sibling to resilience is also a healthy and strong work ethic. Can you talk a little bit about what you saw from mom and on being that ball, which I love that metaphor, being able to, and how do you give that over to children today?
So the way that my mom instilled work ethic in my sister and I was she made us work. So we would get out of school and, she would always have, right? So business people, one of the issues we always tend to have is issues with staff, right? Staff and employees trying to get somebody to show up when they're supposed to. And so we were the reserve unit. If somebody called in and said, hey, we can't come clean with you today, she was calling my sister and I. My sister at the time was in high school and I was in elementary school. And I was vacuuming and taking out trash, and my sister would be responsible for cleaning. And so it was, we got work ethic by working. That's really the only way you can instill work ethic in a child, is to make them actually do the work. And what happens is that a lot of parents won't push their child when they get pushback. All right. So it's, hey, I need you to pick up the trash. And the kid starts crying, I don't want to do it. And the parent says, fine, I'll do it myself, because they don't want to hear the whining. But on the other side of that whining is a sense of pride and a sense of accomplishment and a sense of increased confidence when a kid looks at them and says, hey, I did it. Or you say, hey, you did a great job. And then they want to do that work, right? So it comes from actually making them work. And that's what my mom did.
Yeah, it's a beautiful example. You made me think of, one of my kids is such a mission just getting her to take a shower. But one of the things I like telling her is no one ever regrets taking that shower. And it's like, it's such a simple thing. And like, I don't want to do it. Yeah. But at the same time, you're going to really feel good after you do it. When you're going to go help the neighbor that is not able to rake her leaves, when you're going to do it, you're going to feel good afterwards. And that feeling of good is better than that feeling on the couch that you're going to have enough for the next hour doing nothing. And, I think just leading by example, which sounds like that's something that mom did constantly and consistently throughout your youth and throughout high school, that's something that you were able to by her modeling, you were able to be influenced by and being able to see that that concept. How is that something that, that parents can really try to embed it and imbue it into their kids in a way where it's not just something that they're trying to teach, but they want their kids to absorb and really become a part of who they are? What do parents need to do, whether it's single parents or multiple or two parent households, to teach that concept of that resilience and that modeling that healthy and good behavior that's going to last a lifetime?
The way they do it is through action. It's taking opportunities in their everyday life to get their kids doing things. You know, we can talk about stuff all day long, but nothing really, but kids don't, you know, look at what you say as much as they look at what you do. So first, are we doing that? Are we, you know, are we showing a good work ethic ourselves? Are we, you know, working on our business or our hobby, right? They may not see you go to work, but are they seeing you work on a hobby? Are they seeing you work around the house, right? Are you cleaning the house? Are you cleaning your car? Are you raking the leaves? Or are you doing any of those things that you want your child to do? A lot of times when you're out doing, especially when children are young, you know, they want to come and help you. They want to please you. They want to say, oh, they want to get that affirmation from you. So one of the best ways to do it is to be doing things yourself. I do all kinds of things, and I have two boys, and I'll get my boys involved in the stuff that I'm doing, and I'll show them how to do it. And when I miss those opportunities, I'm like, God, dog, you know, man, I could have shown them how to do this or whatever. And so I just kind of infuse it in my everyday life. If I have to change a tire, you know, I'm going to have them look at how to do it. We're going to talk about the nuts and bolts or whatever. Hey, hand me this. What is this? And that's how you get them involved. And then they start to want to do that because they want to be around you. Now, if your kid doesn't like to be around you, you have a whole nother issue. But first, but if you, they like to be around you and you're doing stuff with them, they'll enjoy it. They'll get it. Yeah, and they'll be out of it.
That's a very, very good point. And, you know, I'm even thinking of when I first learned to drive, my dad made me learn how to change a tire. And it wasn't just about giving me an instruction manual and say, figure it out. It was more like, all right, let's get our hands and knees. Let's, you know, figure out how this works and how to take off the bolts, how to put on the other tire and put away the tire, clean up the mess. And there's obviously a lot of different things that go into it, but it's leading by example in that sense. And just to add one thing, and I think you said it so perfectly regarding what the job of the parent is. When we have those situations when we might miss a learning opportunity or a teaching opportunity for our children, it could also be beneficial to even point it out to them and to say, hey, I know that you wanted to come outside when I was, you know, hooking up the grill and like starting the fire and like how to cook meat. And I just needed some time for myself. And I'm sorry that I didn't want you outside. Next time, you're going to come outside with me. And I apologize that you weren't able to come outside this time. That's on me. That's my fault. And I think a parent taking responsibility for that situation and saying, hey, I could have done better. And I'm putting it out to you. So we also learn the concept of responsibility and ownership for the things that we're talking about. It can go a really, really long way. And I'm curious, and it sounds like that's for sure something that mom did in the household constantly, just from the staff, from her business that she had. I'm curious if there are any specific stories that come to mind when it comes to ownership and responsibility in parenting that come to mind for you that you grew up with.
There's, I would say from my dad, you know, one of the things that I learned from my dad was to, you know, if you do something wrong, just say it. You know, just say it. Don't try to not be accountable for it, right? Everybody makes mistakes. You know, if you make a mistake, own up to it. Hey, I made a mistake, you know, and move on. You know, and I learned that. And then also, and particularly in talking to him as I became an adult myself, right? Because a lot of things I didn't understand about his relationship with my mom or his relationship with me, you know, until I became an adult, right? And so then as you become an adult and you kind of see how the world is and how things operate, you kind of have more empathy for situations in the past, if you didn't understand when you were a kid. And part of that from my dad was just learning that, you know, it's okay to say, hey, you know, I messed up or I made a mistake, you know, or I didn't get this right. And it allows you to kind of clean your own slate in your mind, and take the pressure off of yourself for things that you may have wished you could have done differently or something like that. And so, that's one of the things I've got from it.
That's amazing. And I think when you have those conversations, and I think it's okay for parents to hear that sometimes your kids might be upset at you about something, but that doesn't give an excuse for not having a relationship with them. It doesn't give an excuse for not being there as a parent for them and teaching them whatever skills there are out there that are necessary. And for us as parents to take ownership of that and to say, hey, yes, that didn't work out. And I'm sorry the way I reacted, or maybe the way I didn't react. And I still have a job to do, and I'm going to do it. So when it comes to that concept of knowing how to compartmentalize and put things into, I guess to say, boxes, and sort of put them away, maybe to later or maybe never in a certain way, I'm sort of curious to hear from you regarding how would you teach the concept of a healthy resilience and ownership, but in a way that enhances the relationship and doesn't fragment the relationship.
One of the things I've learned about relationships in general, whether it's parent relationship, and particularly parent relationship, or spousal or whatever, is you have to learn to just accept people for who they are. Right. It's a very challenging thing to do because we normally want people to change, right? I don't like the fact that this person did X, Y, Z. It's like, well, so I want them to change that behavior so that it's more suitable for me. And the other person is like, well, to heck with you. I'm fine just the way I am. You know, you change, you know? And so part of, you know, that, you know, we talk about resilience, is being able to come back to a relationship, understanding that that person is who they are and accepting them exactly how they are, exactly the way they are. And that sometimes is very challenging because it means that you're opening yourself up to be hurt, right? Now, it doesn't mean that you let them continue to hurt you. But it just means that, and part of that resilience, when you like that ball, you hit the ground, you get back up, and you change your strategy. You say, okay, you're not going to change. That's fine. You don't have to change. I'm going to change. I'm going to change the way I approach you, or I'm going to change the way I interact with you, or how I allow you to do things. And that allows you to be able to maintain some sort of a relationship if it's something that's going to be really rocky in your life.
Wow. And that sounds like, and I'm very curious to hear more about this from you. The words that you just said, I think, comes from a place, obviously being a strong person and obviously having a certain recipe inside that allows you to say, hey, I'm stronger, therefore I'm the one that's going to change. I'm going to do that. I'm curious what situations were, how were you able to imbue that inside yourself? What experiences have you been through that has allowed you to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to put myself in a place to change so that I can be in a better relationship with you. Where does that come from within you?
It comes from wanting to have relationships with people in my life that I don't think I would have been able to have those relationships with them if I wouldn't have changed myself. Right. So, you know, with any relationship, one of the things you got to do is look inward, right, when we're dealing with someone, because we can't necessarily expect the person to change, or that they're going to change on our timeline, right? People change when they want to, or sometimes not at all. And so, you know, relationships, you know, with my dad, for example, or just, you know, certain friends that I've had in the past where it was like, okay, you know, they're not changing the thing that I don't particularly like about them, right? So maybe if I change how I allow it to affect me, right, or I can change my interaction with them, then it's no longer a problem for me, you know, okay. If, you know, and so, you know, for example, I got a buddy who, you know, the only way we'll get together and hang out is I got to go all the way over on his side of town, right? I got to call him, you know, it's all on me. And I'm like, man, you know, screw this, man. Like, hey, I don't like that. All right. So I tell you what, you know, if we're going to get together and hang out and have a beer or have tea or coffee or whatever, you know what I mean? You got to come over on this side, because for years I just kept going this side of town. And I like that. I was like, man, I could have done this 5 years ago, you know? And so it's just it just has allowed me to be freer as a person and to allow the other person to be free. Hey, you don't have to change at all. I'll change.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love the way there are so many points there to unpack. And the first thing that comes to mind, something that I talk about in my therapy room, is the concept of what I call making a U-turn, bringing things back on onto yourself. And, you know, let's say you're on a street and the road is closed up ahead. So you have to make a U-turn to go back where you came from. And when we go inside to ourselves, like, okay, so how can I redirect? And I can work on new directions to get to the place where I want to go. I get to decide, do I want to be in this relationship or not? Okay, so we're having different parameters, different ways of going about it. Okay, that's up to me. And I think as a parent, to be able to go ahead and say that, okay, I obviously still would like to have a relationship with my child. And they're doing, saying, dressing, acting in ways that I don't like. But okay, it's not me. They have their own body and soul. They have their own autonomy. And whether it's a teenager or a young adult, or even a tween, it's still a human being trying to find their own way in life. And it's our job as parents to be able to say, okay, I'm here to try to help you. And I have to be able to assist in the areas that you need. And just because I didn't dress that way, or I didn't root for that basketball team, or I didn't like that type of music, doesn't mean that I'm not your parent and we can't have a relationship. So when you make a U-turn, you're able to say, okay, what can I do? How can I go about doing that? But I think taking it even a step further, I know one of my mentors talks about this a lot, concept of ABC, always be curious. And when we ask ourselves that question, which is something that you're saying you're doing, that you did basically on wanting to have relationships, okay, so what can I do? How can I go about this? What's happening right now? Why am I getting upset? Just asking those questions is so important. And I think for me, at least from our conversation so far, the biggest thing I'm taking away as a parent is staying curious and making sure that we're being curious with ourselves, with our relationships around us. And that is one of the most important things in everything that we do in our relationships with our children. And just moving it a little further here, because I think there's so much that the soil of the tree around you is so rich with nutrients growing up with all the things that you've had going for you. And then you have this moment to try to help people that, well, you don't like kids, but it turns into something that you're doing constantly. So what was that change like for you of like, hey, you know, this is nothing that I could just do as a career, but I can really love and have passion for and create the plethora of things that you're doing. What was that shift like within you?
Well, you know, that shift has been amazing and it's still happening, right? And just real quick, you know, parenting is the real full-time job that we have. Your job is truly just a part-time thing. There's 24 hours in a day. As a parent, you're on 24 hours a day. That is full-time. For our jobs, we work 8 hours, 16, 12, whatever, 10. That's part-time, right? But parenting is a full-time. That's a real full-time job, and it really takes all of you to do it. And so by, like you said, always being curious and figuring that out, it allows you to really be able to maintain that relationship with your child, which is the most important thing a parent wants, is to be able to have that functional relationship where we can talk and be able to have some kind of congeniality and respect and joy, right, as opposed to anything else. Now, for me, and the transition of going from not at all wanting to work with children, having zero passion. I mean, I didn't want any booger fingers on me, man. I didn't even want kids at the time. My idea of having kids was to have them when I was like 65 so that I could have kids and grandkids at the same time and get it over with. Like, that was my thing. I don't want to build any kids, right? But what happened is that I saw the need for what was going on. And then I saw the opportunity to be able to build something that I could be able to solve some issues, but then also be able to meet the personal goals I have for myself. And so when I saw that come together, it was like, okay, you know, I can actually buy myself a steak dinner doing this. All right, okay, then let's do it. And then I would see how we would get results. And that was the thing that was really powerful, is that we would see a kid go from, you know, being a complete knucklehead to now, for example, student that has been with me for about 10 years. And the first time this kid came to my camp, he jumped up in a window and broke the window of this church we were leasing at. And I was just like, oh my God, we're going to get kicked out of this place for tearing up these people's stuff. And but we never gave up on this kid. This kid had a solid foundation of people supporting him. And now that kid is graduating from high school and has about 75 different schools that have sent him offer letters wanting him to go to their college, from University of Alabama, you know, all these big D1 schools. And so, you know, it's those stories that you don't know are going to happen, but when you stick with something, it happens. And so my love for what I'm doing is growing and growing more and more every day. I absolutely am in love with what I do now. And that love continues to grow as we're able to, you know, make impact in other places, to see that, you know, something that you either always wanted to do or something that you never saw yourself doing, if you do it, you can really make a difference in the world. Like, you really can, you know, on your level, right? And success in making a difference is relative, right? It doesn't matter, you know, we're caught up in how many millions of lives did you touch, right? How many, all this other, right? It doesn't matter. You know, one life is just as important as 1 million. That one life can make a difference to somebody else's. And so as I've been able to see that and understand that, it makes me really enjoy what I'm doing.
Wow. Wow. And I think that resilience, right? We talked about before, mom, you know, here, there you are breaking a window of a church and still saying, all right, well, he's still one of us. He's still here in this camp and we're going to stick with him. You know, that's like, that's something that became innate. It was a part of you because you watched mom bounce that ball so many times. And there you are, like, organically and subconsciously just bouncing that ball with him. And here you are 10 years later and, you know, you're getting the ultimate prize of him being noticed by others for positive attributes that he has. And, and whether he actually says the words, thank you, or, you know, says your name somewhere has nothing to do with it. It's about you see that person out there, that individual out there on the streets and being that human being that is able to give over his impact to the world, priceless. And it's and that success could be worth everything. And that's, you know, I remember when I was in high school working with underprivileged kids, and we were told at one point we were frustrated with the way things were going, and, you know, leaving our free time that we finally had after the whole days of school and going to spend an hour or two with all the travel involved, probably 3 hours once, twice a week. I'm like, why are we doing this? Like, you know, why don't we just chill? And we were told is because 20 years from now, and when this kid is a parent and his kid's going to come home and said, mom, can you sign me up to the Boys and Girls Club? You know, I want to go to the Y because, you know, they have something going on over there. And the parent remembers that they spent some time with you playing checkers. And they say, yes, 20 years from now, it was a success because what you did on that one day playing checkers or teaching someone how to play checkers was worth it, because now he's doing that for his child. So for that reason, it's worth it. So there's mom finding out, as she has the biggest contract on her hands, that half her workers are not coming in for whatever reason. And she says, hey, Sean, sister, let's go. Roll up your sleeves. We're going to do something. And at the time, you're cursing mom out in your head. You're like, this mom, I can't believe you, cannot believe you're making me do this right now. But you look back at it now, and then, you know, he shows you this letter from Alabama telling you, hey, like, we want you to come play for us. That is like the ultimate golden ticket, you know, for personal motivational standards. So one of your characters that you talk about, you've created a cartoon character, something that I'm a big fan of. I think cartoons can be such a helpful and relatable way for kids to be able to learn lessons. So can you talk a little bit about where you came from, what's it about, and like, what's the story that you're trying to give over through it?
So Team Hot Sauce are personal development characters designed to motivate kids to go after their dreams and to build self-efficacy in children. And so they go all over the galaxy. They're, you know, the veggie defenders is what they are. And they're protecting vegetables from the negatoids, which are vegetable eating insects. And so the concept came up. I have an uncle, my uncle Virgil. Growing up as a kid, loved hot sauce. And I watched him put hot sauce on everything he would eat. I mean, he'd put it, sprinkle it all over. He says he never put it on a salad, but I swear I've seen him put it on salad before. But he was so instrumental in my life, just a really positive influence. And so I was thinking about characters, and he said, okay, well, my son is the one that named it. And when he named it, he said, let's call it the hot sauce team. And I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, he had no idea that my Uncle Virgil was Uncle Hot Sauce. So it's kind of interesting how it all came together for me, because I always called him
Hot Sauce. Awesome.
And the concept with the cartoon is that you have this uncle that's created this multi-million dollar recipe for hot sauce. It's called the Love, right? And so it's the Love, you know, sprinkle a little love around, right, kind of thing. And he has these nieces and nephews that he's adopted, and he's teaching them different principles in life. And they're going all, like, all over the galaxy saving people. So then you have like Coach Stinker, who is another, I have an uncle whose name is Stinker. We call him Uncle Stinker. And Uncle Stinker was a very influential man in my life as well. And so Stinker is actually a boar, like a wild boar, right? Which is wild because boars like the wild one. This one likes to stay clean, the character. And, you know, we have 9 different characters right now that we've developed. And, you know, we have comics in the magazine. And it's just all about getting kids to believe in themselves, see characters that are doing these awesome things, and to say, hey, look, you know, we're doing awesome stuff. You could do awesome stuff too. You know, give it a try.
Sounds so relatable. And the concept is awesome. Where can people find this hot sauce comic?
They can find it. You can have it all. So the kids magazine, we throw the comics in there. The next issue will be out in January. They can check out the comics. And then there's also, you know, merch and stuff like that on the website, stickers and all kinds of stuff for kids to be able to get. And then also you can read up on the characters there as well.
Amazing. And we will be posting links, obviously, in the show notes descriptions over here. So on this concept of superheroes and like on awesome teams. But I think when it comes to superheroes, I think single moms or dads are real superheroes. Just, you know, for the fact of what they have to do. They're playing double roles. And not only is that the real full time job, but it's like on double shift full time job. Yeah. So I'm sort of curious to hear from you regarding, like, obviously, when it comes to being a superhero, sometimes there are unexpected things that happen. What are some like surprise situations that can pop up that maybe from your experiences you can share, parents can be aware of when it comes to being that superhero, that parents be like, oh, okay, that's good to know because I should be prepared for something like that?
The thing is that anything can pop up as a parent, and it's being. And that can be sometimes scary that anything can pop up. You know, it's like, but it's knowing that whatever pops up, you got it. You know, it's that the thing about being a superhero, especially as a parent, right? Because we're just everyday people. We bleed like anyone else. But our kids are the ones that are looking at us like, man, you're so amazing. And that it's understanding that whatever pops up, you got it. You got this. You can handle it. Even when you think you can't handle it, you can handle it. And I think that that is probably the biggest advice that we can give any parent, whether, you know, a single mom or single dad, that you got this. However you became single, you know, you got this. You know, you're able to do it. And that our superpower, right, our recharge is self-care. And it's really important as a parent. It is crucial as a parent to have self-care in your life. And self-care is like, it's a coin thing now, right? But it's like, man, just get some time to yourself to chill and to be yourself and do whatever you want to do so that you can recharge and come back and be a parent. And it's important. So it's finding that support base, that it's someone you can trust to say, hey, I need you to watch my kids for a day or for overnight. It's getting them in activities so that you get that time away from them as well. You know, one of the things I love about, you know, getting my kids in sports or activities is that that's 2 hours that I don't have to watch them. You know, it's an hour and a half that they could just burn out their energy, and I can sit there and I can read a book. I can take a nap. I mean, I take my kids to the movies. I go to the movies so they can watch the movies and so I can get a nap. Because inside the movie, one's here, one's there. They're not moving. They got their popcorn, right, and I'm knocked out. And it's the best sleep ever. And so self-care is crucial to being a superhero as a parent because, you know, Superman had chambers, Wonder Woman had whatever she had. You know, everybody has, and it's important, that self-care.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I'm taking off of what you just said is creating self-care doesn't have to be, you know, going to a spa, getting a massage, or doing something crazy or even expensive. You can create the concept of self-care with what you have around you. For as simple as $8, or if it's a matinee, even cheaper, you can get yourself a solid nap, or maybe answering those ton of emails that you had that you have to get back to, and using the situation around you, which I think is, you know, someone that's quick on their feet and is able to be a superhero. They take their surroundings and know what to do with it. And that's exactly what you're talking about. So I think that's a lesson that is absolutely awesome. You've also been the author of 3 books, which I think is something I'd love to talk about. Obviously something that I'm envious and jealous at the same time, if that's possible. So I would talk a little bit about the concepts. Well, the 3 books, just to, you know, for people, and again, we'll post links for them, are Persevere, Overcome, Win, Raising Extraordinary Kids, and Being Unstoppable, Living Life. Can you talk a little bit about what that experience is like, writing books, what these books are about, and where people can find them?
Yes. So, writing books is a process. That writing a book is a journey, at least it's been for me. So the way that I write, because of the other things that I do, I'm not able to always just sit down and just write, you know, like a Stephen King or something where he can just sit and write for hours, which is an exceptional talent. For me, it's kind of like I'm talking to someone, or I'm on the phone, and an idea hits me, and it's a sentence, and I can write that down. And I'll come back to that concept. Some books for me have taken months, have taken years just to write, just because of the, you know, it just takes time. You know, just, man, like, I don't know what to say right here. Or you think it, and then when you write it out, it doesn't sound like I thought. So it's definitely been a journey. I think that for the different books that I've written, I never would have imagined I would be writing books on youth development. Again, this isn't something that I wanted to do in my life. Persevere, Overcome, Win is about strategies that parents can use to give their children the edge in life, right? Just what are the keys to getting kids to perform at a higher level? More so than it is parenting, how do you get children to perform? How do you get them to be an exceptional whatever you want them to be? What does it take to do that? And Raising Extraordinary Kids is a spinoff of that version. It's just, you know, 5 keys to really, really, really give kids a personal edge. And I did that second one because it needed to be for the super busy parent, right? The uber busy parent that's like, look, I don't have time to read a, you know, 160, 170 page book. You know, just give me some really quick things I can use right now. Be Unstoppable, Living Life is a new book that it's all about youth. It's for children that are ages 13 and up, and it's about how success is relative and how, you know, how our minds stop us from being what we want to be, right? How things that we're looking at are stopping us. And it's like, man, as a kid, a young adult, right? For example, just be yourself. It's one of the hardest things for somebody to do, right? Why fit in when you can stand out? You know, and so it's teaching concepts to young adults because there's so much going on as far as suicide and depression that, you know, these kids need something that they can kind of latch on to.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, there are so many things, Seth, that I would love to continue to talk about over here. As we wind down, I'm curious if, let's say, on these topics that we've covered, are there maybe 1 or 2 points that we haven't talked about or that I haven't asked about that it is important and maybe even vital for this conversation before we end up with a few rapid fire questions over here?
Yeah. So the thing that really is I'm really passionate about is our orphanage. You Can Have It All orphanage in Bombo, Uganda. And the reason why is because, you know, a lot of times we feel like we don't have enough stuff, right? And, oh, if I had more of this, more of that, I would be better, life would be happier, you know? And, you know, it's a saying, you know, I can't remember exactly how it goes, but, you know, you basically, you know, somebody complains about their shoes until they see a man that has no feet, right? And so it's kind of the same kind of concept where, you know, there are really children in the world and also in the United States. But for me, I ended up latching on to, you know, an orphanage on the other side of the globe. But there are kids that are really in need, man, you know, that they have no bed. There's no windows in their place. They're both their parents are gone. They don't have any family. And so when we, you know, got attached to the orphanage, it was closing down. And I was there doing an event, you know, you can have a conference actually. And we said, okay, what is it going to take to keep the doors open? And they told us, and they said, okay, that was something that we could afford to do. And so we've been doing that for the last 5 or 6 years. We have 35 kids there, and we've been able to add, you know, windows and solar panels and all these things. And it's a very modest start, but we've been able to make some kind of impact so that kids can be able to go to school. And so the orphanage is part of the proceeds of everything that I do goes to making sure that these kids are able to keep going. And so that's something that's really dear to my heart because, you know, I growing up, you know, I thought that I had it challenging and I realized, man, I had it great compared to some of the other kids that I'm seeing. You know, you don't see child homelessness in the United States. You hear about it, but you don't walk down the street and see a kid on the street in the U.S. At least not often. I've never seen it. I'm sure it's there, but you don't see it just like it's every day. But there are certain parts of the world, man, you walk down the street and you see some feet under there and you're like, wait a minute, those are size fives. You know, that's a little kid up under that cardboard box. And then you realize there's 20 of them. And it's like, oh my God, right? There's some stuff going on over here. So, you know, not to be, you know, the American that comes in and swoops and saves everybody in the world, but I feel like that since we are in a place that we have something that we can do, you know, resources to do something with, that, you know, if we can do that for anybody in the world, maybe we should do that, you know, whatever we can.
So where can people find more information and how can they get in contact regarding the orphanage?
On the website. So information about that, you can go to youkids.world, the orphanage, and information for the orphanage is there. And I'll also send you the link, gosfb.com is where there's a profile of me and all the work that I'm doing. Right? For someone who just wants to say, okay, here's this guy, what is he doing? Go to SFB, gosfb.com is where they find that.
Amazing. And we're going to post all those links in the show notes. But thank you so much for joining us today. Man. Just a few little questions over here, just to sort end on the note. So if single parenting, obviously, there's so much multitasking that's involved, and it's probably one of the most essential skills. If you were to create a single parent Olympics, what events would you include? And what would be your gold medal winning multitasking moment? We're good.
So what I would include, oh, wow, would be, oh, man, it would be like the laundry folding game or something where, like, you have to, there are screaming kids in the room and there's piles of clothes that you have to wash and then fold and put in perfect stacks and, like, put them in the drawers. That would be something. That would be a game that I would definitely do. Another one I would probably do would be, like, Monday night dinner. Like, you know, like, okay, you have five ingredients and you got to make a nice meal for your kids with all their finicky appetites. Go. You know, something like that. It. Yeah.
That's really great. Okay. I love those examples over here. Well, if you had a superpower as a parent that would help with everyday mundane parenting, what would that be?
My superpower would be seeing things through kids' eyes, right? Like just being able to be a kid again has been my superpower with my kids.
From their perspective.
From their perspective. Yeah, from their perspective, just being able to come out of adult mode and go all the way down to being Optimus Prime and Autobots roll out. You know what I mean? Like that's been my superpower. It's like, you know, like Big. Remember that with Tom Hanks? Like, man, pop out of being an adult, come down to being a kid. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. Well, if there would be either book or podcast or maybe YouTube that you would recommend to people other than your own that they can find out more about parenting and how to be a better version of themselves, what book would that be?
What book would that be? Interestingly enough, the book that comes to my mind first is The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz. It has nothing to do with parenting, which is interesting enough. But there is a chapter, chapter two, and it's about excuse-itis. And it talks about not accepting excuses and not making excuses, that people make a lot of excuses for why they don't accomplish their dreams. And I think that that is an exceptional chapter because as parents, we make excuses for why we don't do things and we use our kids for that reason. Oh, I can't go get my doctorate because I got to raise these kids. Oh, I got to hang it up. I got these kids. But wait a minute, you're a pediatrician. You went to school to be an engineer. Why are you, don't use your kid? No, dude, they need to see you parent and actually do these things because then they see that it's possible. They need to see that it's challenging and that things are challenging and that you can overcome them. The first place that a child learns tenacity or resilience is at home from watching their parents. You know, okay, we need to cut the grass. Is dad going to cut the grass or mom? Or are they going to pay for somebody to get it done? What's going to happen? And when we don't do those things and we make excuses for why we don't do them, then it teaches our children to do the exact same thing. So that's why this is the magic of thinking big. It has nothing to do with parenting, but that chapter on excuse-itis and having a big dream is important because that big dream, especially if your children are fueling your dream, motivates you to do things you normally would not do.
I love it. Oh, that's absolutely amazing. And one of the best answers that I've personally heard here on this podcast. But thank you so much for everything, SF. This has been a real, real pleasure and honor.
Thank you. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. We got
Hey again. I hope you were able to learn as much as I did today. Thank you so much for staying to the end and listening to the entire interview. Please feel free to leave a comment wherever you listen to this podcast. All comments will be read weekly, and we appreciate all feedback and ideas. If you have an idea for a guest or a specific topic, please feel free to share. Additionally, you can contact us at parentingiseasypodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's parentingiseasypodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for joining today. And remember, parenting is a journey. Don't forget to enjoy it. The goal is to be a little better today than yesterday, and hopefully better tomorrow than we were today.